This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us. Welcome to the Podium Finish Live, episode number 97. I'm your host, Rob Tiansen. And on this edition of the World's Fastest Hour of Racing Talk, first of all, we're back after a bit of a reprieve because it's the holiday season, it's the off season. So naturally, we're not going to be on as much. But for the month of December, we're only three more episodes away from episode 100. So I'm kind of motivated to get an episode in every week. And then when we get to January, you know, obviously we should have a little bit more content with the 2024 racing season here and ready to slay, as the kids would say. But speaking of kids, Nathan Solomon, who is not my son, but my co-host and my buddy from St. Bonaventure University, he's not here today because he's too busy being a really good senior and probably an ESPN Plus commentator. But never fear, it is a boys and girls kind of show today because we've got staff writer Brooklyn Jackson in the house ever in our show. And by the way, folks, it's her first ever podcast appearance of any kind. So be nice to her. You could save all your complaints for me. But anyways, it's a pretty fun show because it's going to be girl power show. Not only do we have Brooklyn as my co-host for this episode, but we have the most recent Mazda MX-5 Women's Initiative Scholarship winner, Sally Mott, in the house. And like me, in a way like me, she's from the state of Texas, but even better, she's a race car driver, a little bit better than me. But we're going to hear from her a little bit later on about her journey, what got her into racing, who got her into racing, all the above, and what she's looking forward to in 2024. So when you hear this show this week, we're only 3 or 4 weeks away from the end of 2023. It's sad because that means 1994 will be 30 years ago. That means that Mr. Red Flag himself, Luis Torres, is going to be having a lot of fits about turning 30. But that's okay because life doesn't end at 30. It begins at 30. But anyways, I digress. Let's go bring in Brooklyn before I go into a rant about age and ageism. So Brooklyn, welcome to the podcast. Of course, you know who I am, but for the folks at home, why don't you tell us what you do and who you are and what's going on?
Yeah, hi. It's good to be here on the podcast. So you already said my name is Brooklyn. I am from the great state of Arkansas, Mark Martin territory. I am a college student still right now. I graduated with one degree in May, with an education degree in May. And so I'm working with preschoolers right now. And I'm working on, when I'm not with my little kids, I'm working on a communications degree.
So you are basically the mistress of skills. You're putting a lot of us at shame because you're juggling the demands of children with your passion. So Nathan and I have nothing on you then.
Oh, I try to be multi-talented. I try my best.
That's fair enough. I wish you folks at home could see the Zoom. Maybe we'll put our clips eventually online. But I was saying to Brooklyn earlier, I'm like, I look like I'm a host for a Nickelodeon Junior show right now. And in my room, I should basically have cartoon puppies and kittens around me talking about like, hey, kids, this is what stagger means and welcome to Thunder Alley or stuff like that. But maybe we'll do that for next year. Don't idea, guys and girls. Try to make money on YouTube. But anyways, it's the Tay-Tay edition of our show. If you know, you know. But anyways, before we get into all the fun engrossing conversations that you really should be hearing on Podium Perspectives, why don't we hear from our sponsor, SpoilerDiecast.com. Hey, racing fans, are you in the hunt for the latest and greatest in diecast cars? Head on over to SpoilerDiecast.com to get the latest offerings in Lionel Racing, NASCAR collectibles, IndyCar collectibles from Greenlight Collectibles, and much more. If you spend $20 or more in in-stock or pre-order items, you can save 5% off your order and get free shipping with promo code TPF. So head on over to spoilerdiecast.com, spend $20 or more, and use promo code TPF to get free shipping and 5% off your order. Evan and his team get those orders out fast in lightning speed fashion. A proud sponsor of TPF Live. Yes, indeed, folks. You'd better get on your Christmas shopping or holiday shopping because by my estimates, it's about, 2.5 weeks before you get those gifts sent to your house. In some cases, some stores are saying shop, shop, because by this Friday, you better get your stuff together because they're done shopping or shipping rather for the rest of this year. So spoilerdiecast.com, get them to work, make them be your hero or heroine for your holiday season needs. But right now, let's go and get into Podium Perspectives, powered by SpoilerDiecast.com. Now, this week, we actually have cars on the racetrack. I know, folks, it's exciting, even if it's a test session. I'll break it down in the most simplest way that even those who may have been under a rock can understand this. So NASCAR is having a test session on Tuesday and Wednesday, basically because of all the complaints about the racing package on the short tracks and these flatter tracks that we've seen since the next gen's introduction. What are they trying to accomplish? Well, let me break it down to you this way. What's been the most common complaint that we've been saying on Podium Perspectives for TPF Live since last year? Oh, drivers are basically shifting gears. Well, seems like NASCAR is trying to say, well, I don't think we want to have that anymore. Also, too, we're just trying to make sure that these cars can do what we want them to do in terms of good on-track action and be a little bit more familiar to what we deserve to see on the racetrack, whether you're a fan, whether you're a journalist like us, you know, all kinds of things. The aim is to offer improvement in the next-gen car in a variety of areas. So they're going to be there again Tuesday and Wednesday. This is basically based off the momentum from a separate summer test done at Richmond Raceway. So a significant part of this test is going to be determining the right steps to take with the tires, with tire compounds, with thicker treads that were ran at Martinsville and Phoenix at the end of the year, learned from what was done at the Richmond test. Apparently, drivers like that. So that's going to be their baseline. And then they're going to try to get rid of limiting or even limiting the shifting that we've seen. So that's going to be fun. And hopefully we're trying to make the internal cockpit temperatures a little bit more tolerable, because who wants to see your favorite driver be all kind of sweaty and gross and moist after a race? I know I love to see that. I don't. I really don't. And Brooklyn doesn't like to see that either. So anyways, now that I've explained all of that, I know Brooklyn, you're the younger generation, the vibe, if you will, of NASCAR. Is this a really commendable effort for NASCAR to basically say, hey, kids, before the holidays arrive, let's get our priorities set and squared away for 2024?
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, I know we've had some struggles the past couple seasons with the next-gen car. I know people have had kind of complaints about maybe several different things. But, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, right? We had the Gen 6 car from 2013 to 2021. And so I think it's maybe a bit eager to say, oh, we're going to get this next-gen car and it's going to be perfect, right? They're going to have to work on it. The engineers are human. I think it's very good that, you know, they are listening to drivers. They are having test sessions. That's definitely something I like seeing.
And we do too, because we want to see the best racing in anywhere around the world in NASCAR, because we are praising the heck out of this car at the intermediate tracks. Brooklyn, in fact, got to see one of the best races in NASCAR history at Kansas earlier this year in September. I thought that was a hell of a race. In fact, even before she joined TPF, you saw the classic finish between Kurt Busch and Kyle Larson, and nobody was talking about that. I saw that, and you saw it in person. I was like, that was a great race. And I'm like,
I was lucky enough to see it in person, yeah. And I was there with my dad, and everybody there knew how special that was. Even in the moment, we were like, we just got to see one heck of a race. Like, that was amazing.
And the best part is that fans are now probably thinking Kansas Speedway is one of the best tracks, the must see racetracks on the circuit, whether it's the spring race weekend or the playoffs. So if we loved intermediates, folks, we want tracks like Martinsville, we want Bristol, we want New Hampshire. The list goes on and on. We want to see good racing everywhere. Richmond, even, which unfortunately we talk a lot about on this podcast. We love the people of Richmond. The tracks, on-track product, I don't know about that. But hopefully this Phoenix test gets us in the right direction. And it seems like that's the case, because Chris Buescher was saying that the biggest thing we want to see is just how to get better racing, better opportunities, looking for tire fall off and looking for less dirty air, which, trust me, it's not the kind of dirty air where people kind of, you know, I'm not going to go there. You get a little gassy. That's dirty air, in my opinion. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But you, it should be pretty good. Excuse me. It should be good stuff, folks. I'm encouraged that NASCAR is even wanting to do a test this late in the year to think about 2024. So if we love to the 75th anniversary season, I think number 76 is going to be pretty, pretty good. Because let's talk about 2024 for a little bit here, Brooklyn, because obviously this week, the week of December 4th through the 8th, we're starting to see some new paint schemes being unveiled. Now, I know we're going to talk about Toyota's new Camry nose, which looks, I don't know, like a Tesla. The Ford Mustang Dark Horse looks, that's an awesome car. So I know we haven't seen a bunch of them yet. It's a beautiful car for sure. What paint scheme so far has your eyes like, ooh, this is really good?
There are several. I just off the top of my head, because it's fresh in my head, it was released today. The Chase's number 9 was released today, and we haven't had a blue based number 9 since he went to the number 9, since he switched from the 24 to the 9. We haven't had a completely blue based, we haven't seen a blue based car from him. So I think that's probably my favorite so far.
I dig it too, because it's, yeah, it looks basically like what we saw from 2015 to 2017. And also too, it reminds me of his Xfinity winning car from 2014.
It does.
Yeah, I really love that they went back to it.
Yeah, that's the first thing I actually thought of when I saw it. I was like, this is like the Xfinity days, like his first few cup seasons. It just, like, before the past few seasons. Yep.
Before everybody felt like Earth turned over on its side because of the whole white and blue combination that was introduced in 2018. And funny thing is 2018, that's when he started winning races. So hopefully this is kind of him saying, I can, you know, we're going to retire this blue and white paint scheme deal. We're going to try to win it with this particular car. And you folks have to see it. It's a really nice looking car. I know when you look at renders for the die casts, it's not exactly conducive to the real thing. But if you look at like Chase's X post or social media post that unveils the Snap a Racing ride, it's pretty good looking to say the least. So props to whoever did that paint scheme design. I don't want to say who it is because I don't know who it is, but they did their homework to say the least. And for me, I think the paint scheme that has captured my eyes so far, I would have to say Chris Buescher's number 17 Fastenal Ford Mustang Dark Horse. I love that car. It now makes a lot more sense as to why they put those eyebrow sponsors on it. The reason why I called eyebrow sponsors is because starting at, I want to say, Richmond Race Weekend, they started putting the decals above the headlight door panelic areas. So I call them the eyebrows of the car. It the Fords just look so awesome. They look so tough. They look like they wanted to get revenge on Chevrolet for dominating the last several years. So it's a new era, a new era, new ch energy being channeled by Ford Performance because Kevin Harvick's retired, and now you've got a defending champion going the next year in Ryan Blaney, who he's not even 30 yet, folks. He will be later on this month, but he's a youngster, in my opinion. So it's a fun time, and I'm sure we'll see more paint schemes. So we'll revisit this question again when we have, see another batch of paint schemes. I know Hendrick likes to try to get them out before the end of the year, so we have yet to see the new Exalta paint scheme, the Raptor paint scheme. There's a lot out there. Even Josh Berry sponsors. We don't even know who they are yet. So that's going to be fun to see. And
Yeah.
even better when it's the LA Clash Race weekend, because we know it's almost time to get real. Real serious for sure. Now, speaking of Chase Elliott, now for those folks who really are still living under a rock, I hope you're not. Last week, we had the NASCAR Awards show in Nashville. And of course, that was a week or basically a few days in Nashville to honor those who won at the national level as well as the regional level. And then we also had the most popular drivers named for the fans. And not surprisingly, on the Cup side of things, Chase Elliott won it again. And it's, I think, the sixth time he's done it since he's been up to the Cup Series. So my question to you, Brooklyn, is should we just basically just hand him the trophy until he retires?
My short answer, no, right? I feel like this is kind of like maybe a like one of the funnier controversial things, right? In my so I think I mean he did earn it. Like people did vote, right? Like if you go to the track, you do see a lot of nine gear. I mean, no one can I think or will deny that. But maybe the one thing I guess I would say at this point is I think like 2017 stands out to me, like the year Ryan Blaney sort of marketed for it, like put out the video like, hey, vote for me, right? He put out several videos actually. So I think that was fun. So I think I would like to still see people do that. Like whether it's like funny or not. I think, yeah, and I think you kind of got a little bit of that this year. I think this year was definitely maybe the first year where people were like, oh, is he gonna win? Like, is a Ryan Blaney gonna win? Is a Kyle Busch gonna win? Is some a dark horse gonna win, right? That maybe nobody's talking about as much. So I think, yeah.
Mr. Chase Elliott is not exactly safe to get the Cup Popular Driver Award because, yeah, I mean, Ross Chastain's the driver that folks are starting to gravitate towards, even
I
if
saw.
he, yeah, I mean, top five, it's that's saying
Yeah.
a lot because there were times in 2022 and sometimes this year that he did probably bump into your favorite driver. So, you know, it is what it is. There's a lot of drivers like that throughout NASCAR's history that have inevitably done things like that, to say the least. Kyle Larson was another driver in the top five, which it's no surprise, but obviously, you know, it was going to come down to me, in my opinion, between Elliott and Blaney, because both fan bases are just so loyal to their driver. Elliott
Right.
fans, of course, young fans, fans of his father, Bill, they're going to all congregate. And then the whole state of Georgia is going to, of course, support him. And then you have Ryan Blaney with the legions of what we call Blaniacs. So it's almost like having to choose between NSYNC or Backstreet Boys. I don't know if that's kind of a relevant comparison anymore, but I don't know the boy bands these days. I don't listen to boy bands in 2023.
I mean, I I think he's definitely still relevant.
Okay.
But I definitely, yeah. Ross Chastain was another one I heard. I saw some stuff about him online even. Yeah, like you said, Kyle Larson was another one. I mean, there's several people that were talked about this year that won. So, I mean, Chase isn't just given it like some people say, maybe. But, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I know a lot of folks are like, oh, they're just going to give him the championship for the most popular driver. And I'm like, no. Take it easy, folks. There are actually other drivers that people like. So that's the case in Cup. And of course, for the other series, we had Justin Allgaier win it again for the Xfinity Series. The other top five vote getters were Josh Berry, Sheldon Creed, Cole Custer, and Josh Williams, who is having a heck of an offseason because he'll be going to College Racing, of course, next year. And then the NASCAR Truck Series, the soon-to-be departing Haley Deegan going up to Xfinity, she won the most popular driver award. And then, you know, finishing in the top five were Matt DiBenedetto, who right now we don't know where he's going to end up going, Stuart Friesen, truck stalwart, Carson Hocevar, who's going to be graduating the Cup in 2024. So maybe he's another driver who might give Chase a run for his money. And then the ever popular, the ever carousing alcoholic drinker. I'm kidding, Ben Rhodes. Ben Rhodes got it. Ben, I'm sorry. I should have said, and everyone's favorite steak eater, Ben Rhodes. But that's okay. Ben knows I'm just kidding. So lots of good drivers out there that you fans should know about. And I know Brooklyn and I will probably talk about it on a actually, we could talk about it on this podcast about how NASCAR drivers need to have better marketing, but this is the holiday season. We're trying to be happy here, I think, maybe. Now, for this final topic for podium perspectives, I often talk about winning time, but unfortunately, we don't have a race until early February of 2024. So I've been kind of making the fourth topic our wild card one. So because it's Brooklyn's first ever podcast and her first appearance on TPF Live, I will tell you folks my answer, but we want to hear from Brooklyn first, ladies first, gentlemen afterwards. Brooklyn, what is the first race that made you become very enthused about NASCAR and why?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, I was exposed to NASCAR at like a young age, right? I'm from Arkansas, so everybody kind of knew who Mark Martin was. I'm from a couple hours like southwest of his hometown. My sister went to college in Batesville, where he's from. But I would definitely say the first race that made me get personally invested in it and like watching consistently every week was the 2017 Daytona 500. Just because, you know, a couple weeks before the Daytona 500, I had seen a commercial and I was like, oh, like we'll have to remember like to see how that turns out, like what happens. Like I hadn't even been thinking about it, but like we were just like watching TV one night. And so we did, right? And Chase Elliott was on the pole. And in 2017, he was 21 years old and I was 16, right? So I was like, oh, like that's cool. Like he's like only 21 years old. Like that's crazy, right? And he didn't win the race, right? He finished 14th. But he did start on the pole, and who finishes second? Ryan Blaney. Kurt Busch won the race, but Ryan Blaney finished second, and he was 23 years old at the time. I was like, oh my gosh, like that would be like, that's so wild. Like they're like in their early 20s and like not like they're Cup Series NASCAR drivers. Like that's cool. And, you know, the next year, Ryan Blaney started the Glass Case of Emotion podcast within the next year-ish. And by the 2019 season, my dad and I were driving to Kentucky to see my first trackside race.
The that trackside race, folks, that's when her life changed, because I believe that's when Mr. Ryan Blaney and Brooklyn had a nice little photo together, and his beautiful brown locks is what made her become a NASCAR fan and eventually a NASCAR journalist, I think. Is that what I'm piecing together correctly?
I mean, no. I mean, that's I did get to meet him. Yes, I did get to meet him. I mean, that's a story you could say, I guess.
I tend to embellish a little bit on the details with that, but no, that's so cool that you
Maybe
have
I should start telling it that way.
you should. You have my permission as editor-in-chief to do that. Might help that key demographic that we're looking to get in NASCAR, but
No, yeah.
that's, I think that's so cool that your first ever NASCAR race was one of the races where the young drivers were doing some big things, because like you said, Elliott won the pole. Blaney was up in the front of the field. I think Kyle Larson was actually leading that race early on. And I think at the time he was what, 24 years old, which it's kind of weird to say that because now he's 31, 32, something like that. So it was the race of young guns. It's kind of what made me think, oh, I should continue to write about NASCAR. Because in my case, I came from the old school generation. Being born in 85, that meant that my first NASCAR race that I ever really got to watch on TV was the 1991 Champion Spark Plugs 400 that was at Michigan. And yes, folks, it's a big thing that people got to watch a race live, because back in the early 90s, it wasn't a guaranteed thing for a network to go and have a race flag to flag live. Now, we know with CBS, that's typically assumed. But for ESPN, there were some occasions where they were like, you know what? We've got to really show this workout program over a NASCAR race on Sunday afternoon. But on this particular Sunday afternoon, on I think mid-August of 91, they did show this race live. We were watching this in my living room. I was like 5 years old. And we just happened to put it on because we were channel surfing. All the Boston teams stunk. And it was one of the most amazing finishes. I'm going to demonstrate it for Brooklyn. You guys can't see this, but pretend that these are the cars. They were going side by side on the back straight stretch in Michigan. So if you like the finish of 2023's race, it's even better than that, because the two leaders were side by side going to the back straightaway. They were bumping fenders. They get to turn three, nobody's lifting an inch. Turn four, same thing. Who's gonna blink first? And then we get to the front straightaway, the dog leg of Michigan International Speedway. The two drivers, Dale Jarrett and Davey Allison, were still going side by side, rubbing fenders. And I was like, oh my goodness, they're probably gonna crash. I didn't say it like that because I'm 5 years old. I don't really speak that eloquently. I was more like saying, oh wow, oh wow. And then eventually it came down to a photo finish in which Dale Jarrett won over Davey Allison. That was cool. The other cool thing was is that a small time driver beat a big time driver, because at the time, Dale Jarrett was a 36-year-old driver who really was bouncing from ride to ride. I guess you could say in the sports term, he was really unheralded. And Davey Allison was kind of the Chase Elliott of the time, sort of the popular driver, the son of a famous race car driver who was making his name for himself. So to see somebody new beat Davey that day at Michigan was huge. And the next week, my mom took me to the toy store in Boston, nearby Boston, rather. And we just happened to see the car that Dale Jarrett won the race in, not obviously the same car, but a replica of it. So I got it. And the funniest story with that was the fact that I forgot to take out the nail on the bottom of the car, the base of the car. So I was playing outside with it in my driveway and pretending to make laps around my mom's Oldsmobile Cutlass Sierra. And I kind of scratched her car.
Oh
Yeah.
my goodness.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, how would I have known there's a nail underneath the car? It says the car is for
Right.
ages 5 and above, but apparently
Yeah.
they put a little nail on the bottom of this thing. But imagine it wasn't this small version. It was a huge 124 scale car.
Yeah.
So her car was all scratched up, and I mean we got it fixed, but that was my introduction to NASCAR. So it's not as fun as yours. Mine was pretty painful, but it assured me that racing was going to be my thing. Now, it didn't mean that I watched every race, week to week, like you did with your situation with 2017 Brooklyn. But in 91, I would say I was like, okay, I knew what NASCAR was. If I had a chance to see it, I would stop and do that. And then Jeff Gordon came around in 1993 in Cup. And I'm pretty sure that's what sold it for me, because I was like gravitating towards a driver like you. You were gravitating towards Blaney and Elliott for being young and good drivers. Well, same thing for me for Jeff Gordon, which is weird to say because everybody knows he's the OG youngster. Now he's the old guy. But in 93, he was only 21, 22 years old. So I was like, this is super cool. I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I identified with somebody who stood out and was different from the crowd. So I made it a point every weekend that there was a NASCAR race. Even if we had plans, I was going to stick at home to watch every single race. And I'm glad I did, because I eventually kept watching every race so much that I even got to interview the driver who got me into NASCAR. So I'm actually, to describe for you folks who can't see the video, I'm holding a photo where Jeff and I, you know, met at New Hampshire Motor Speedway in 2015. I got to interview him during what was supposed to be his last season, which we know it wasn't, because he came back to help out Dale Jr. in 2016. But last season, this number 24 driver, and was super, super cool to have that moment. So that's my little story. If you want to hear more about it, because it's the off season.
The cool thing of you mentioning that is, we were talking about me being at Kansas in September. I actually, in the media center, I got to interview Blaney again. So as a journalist this time, which was a really kind of a full circle-ish moment of we're both, I'm 23 now, and he's 29. So I'm kind of how old he was when I kind of started, I consistently watching, and yeah.
You're going to have your moment like this where eventually you get to have a photo frame of a great moment that you'll remember forever. And yeah, this was super cool. I didn't expect that to happen. I was surprised when I got told I could interview Jeff. And of course, you folks at home know, because I would hope you're an avid listener of TPF Live. He's been on this podcast several times since, you know, that first meeting I had in New Hampshire. So Ryan, you better get on this podcast, because Brooklyn is a great young journalist. We got to get you on the hot seat, man. So I don't think he's ever been a guest on our show. So we've got to change that in 2024, I'd say, because we got to get...
He's a champion now.
That's right. You're the defending cup champion, bro. I know you don't do glass case of emotions, so come to our podcast.
No,
we're fun.
No more glass case.
We're just breaking the hearts of many young girls, man. That's just not good. Not a good look, bro. I'm kidding. Good for me, maybe. I don't know, whatever. Never mind. I sound like a lonely groucher right now, but it's so fun to talk about first NASCAR races, because that answer is going to differ for everybody. So Nathan's, of course, I'm sure had to do something with Carl Edwards in, I want to say, 2007 or 2008-ish, and then he got into it like 2011. Which is the second to last year of the Car of Tomorrow, in which everybody loves the Car of Tomorrow. Not really. No, I have opinions on that thing, but we're not gonna do that right now. We'll talk about that during a future off-season episode. But what was your first race, folks? What was the thing that got you to become a NASCAR fan? Why don't you tell us on our social medias? That includes X, Threads, Facebook, Instagram, or InstaFace even. I don't know what they call it these days. Hit us up on The Podium Finish. My Twitter handle, of course, or ooh, X handle, excuse me, because I don't want Mr. Musk to go after me. Everywhere around on social media, it's at Rob Tionks. And then, yes, I was able to get Brooklyn to even join X as well. So if you want to talk racing with her, which you better, because she's really awesome like that, I will let Brooklyn tell you her Twitter handle, because our X handle, I can't stop saying Twitter. But Brooklyn will tell you where to find you on social.
Yeah. So my Twitter is Brooklyn Jax. The O's are zeros. So it's BR00KLYN Jax, JACKS. So follow me there. I give updates. every now and then. I probably need to be a little better about that, but I'm more of an Instagram person. But I'll get better about Twitter updates. My New Year's resolution for the off season.
And you are our resident TikTok guru as well.
I do love TikTok. I don't post, so I'm not like posting, but I do love the TikTok.
And that's exactly how we found Brooklyn, by the way, because Stephen Conley, who is a little older than me, happens to know how to use TikTok. I need to learn lessons on how to use TikTok. I believe that's how Brooklyn and Steven met, which brought her over to our side, the dark side. And we're grateful for that. So social media sometimes has good things, folks.
It is. I have TikTok to be thankful for to be here.
Tick, tick, tock, you don't stop. Sorry. That's a really old hip hop reference I just did for you, Brooklyn. So you're probably like, oh God, more dad jokes on the podium finish live. But
I have so much, like my music library is filled with just about like every genre, but hip hop and rap are vastly underrepresented on my library.
We're going to have to work on that.
More than most people would say.
We're going to have to work on that, but we'll make it the OG stuff because that's all I ever listen to. So I have no clue who any of these artists are that I see on the late night shows circuit or even at the racetrack where people are like, oh, this person's there next to Tyler Reddick. I'm like, who? Who's that? I don't know. I just know Biz Markie and MC Hammer and Beastie Boys.
I should be better at rap because I have the same birthday as Tupac.
What?
I learned that when I was like 18 or 19, that I have the same birthday as Tupac. He was passed away by the time I was born, but
Tupac, though, he's actually one of my favorite hip hop artists. So there you go, folks. little fun fact on TPF Live. I just learned that for the first time on our show. So here you go. That's probably what I'm going to gift you for your birthday one day, Brooklyn. So be prepared, as they would say in The Lion King. And speaking of be prepared, it's time to get ready for the segment that everybody looks forward to. It's In the Hot Seat with Sally Mott. Well, welcome back to another edition of In the Hot Seat. I'm your host, Rob Tiongson, and I'm so happy that you could join me for this edition of In the Hot Seat as we're gearing up for the 2024 season. And as you've been noticing, folks, there's been a bit of a theme with our hot seat as of late. We're introducing you folks to up-and-coming drivers and those who are ready to make their names known in the world of motorsports. So on this edition of In the Hot Seat, I am pleased to be joined by a fellow Texan, an actual Texan, unlike me, because I'm fake and this one's not. 18-year-old Sally Mott is joining me here in the hot seat from Victoria, Texas. And if you haven't heard about her yet, well, you're in luck. We're going to introduce you to her because she's going to be a name to be reckoned with, not only next year, but for many years to come. So, Sally, thank you for making time today to join me here for the podium finish. How are you doing today?
I'm just living the dream. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. It's just about the end of November, so when folks get to hear this, they're probably freaking about Christmas shopping or holiday season shopping. So I'm like, I've got it made in the shade. I hope you do too.
Mm-hmm.
Good times, because people just need to be reminded of the holidays when we can clearly just tell them anytime you want. But anyways, not to talk about shopping right now, but you know, obviously, I've done a lot of research about you. We've been talking, before this, and it's quite evident just how much you love racing. It's a passion of yours that you and your father, Robbie, have in common. So, you know, before you got into your first go-kart, I was just curious, what were your first impressions of racing, whether it's a memory of watching a race on TV or when you got to attend a race in person? Like, what stood out to you as a kid when you saw racing?
Well, I vividly remember walking into the living room multiple times. And my dad's just, you know, laying on the couch after hard days of work or whatever it may be. And he always had Formula One on the TV. And that was a time when Lewis Hamilton was on his win streak. And so I would hear over and over, Hamilton, Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton, Hamilton. Like, I'm like, who's this Hamilton guy? I was like, that's such an interesting name. Like, I don't know why, I just remember thinking that the name Hamilton was really interesting. I was like, huh. And then I would sit down with him and watch. And I was like, I didn't know what was going on. I was just like, wow, cars are going really fast on the track. But I was like, that's pretty cool. And growing up around like karting and stuff, my dad, he's multi-level national champion. And so I would go to his races and, you know, see him win and podium. And I would just think in my mind, like, wow, those things are going really fast. It's pretty cool, right? I was just like, huh, I didn't really know what to put together. And then we started going to the track. And when I was about 8, I was just driving around. And, you know, I was kind of, I told my dad I was too scared to race for some reason. I wish I would have started sooner because I would have had more experience by now. But it's all good because everything happens for a reason. But I would go out there and drive, and he wouldn't let me drive the wrong line. He would make sure that if I was going to be out there, even if I wasn't racing, I needed to be practicing the right racing line. And then so once I started doing like test days out at Katy, GCKI is my home track. Once I saw it on the TV again, I was like, oh, like I kind of made that connection. Like, okay, like I've driven before and I've been on a go-kart track. Like, it's probably similar to F1 maybe, you know, like in my mind, I was like, I got this right. Little did I know. But those are my like early memories of racing. I was very intrigued.
That's so cool. And the fact that you caught Lewis Hamilton during those title runs with Mercedes and how it stood out to you. It was like a little imprint to watch a driver of his caliber kind of be like, and your father, of course, too, kind of being the impetus for what you're doing. And I remembered on your website, your little biography, you were saying, I'm afraid to race against the boys, but you were eventually overcame that fear. Was it a case where you were like, you know what? My go-kart doesn't care what gender I am. I'm just going to go and give it my best. Is that what you thought to yourself?
Honestly, kind of the opposite. I was like, you know what? I'm going to kick their butt because I'm a girl. And I was like, just because I'm a girl, I got to win. I got to beat all the boys. Like that was kind of my motivation. But you're right. I mean, your go-kart, your car, like regardless of what you're driving, like it doesn't know what gender you are. It doesn't know what color you are. Like all it knows is that there's a driver in the car and it's going to be driven. And so that's the beautiful thing about racing. But I've always looked at it as like, I'm a girl, so I need to work harder, right? Physically, mentally, because I'm a girl, like, you know, guys are like, oh, if I show her a nose cone, like in karting, if I show her a nose cone, she's going to lift. She's going to let me have it. And as a girl, you have to be more assertive. You have to be like, nope, I'm putting my foot down. I mean, literally like the throttle, you know what I mean? Like, nope, I'm not going to let you pass me. And also on a business side of things, you know, it's more work. But I love it, and I think it's definitely paying off, and it doesn't feel like work, actually, because I love it. And so I think it's an advantage and a disadvantage at the same time.
I like what you said about how you have to work a little bit harder than what, you know, the predominant gender or individual is in racing, because let's face it, it is primarily white Caucasian men that are racing. And here you are, you're like, well, I'm a girl, I'm going to go and whoop your you know what. And that's a good mentality to have, because I often hear from girl racers, they're like, I don't want to be a girl racer, I just want to be a racer. But you're using this to your advantage, if you will. And I like that, because was there a particular female driver who inspired you, or are you kind of thinking like, I'm going to be a trailblazer here, I know there's no one like me, so let me make my own little contribution to racing?
Well like what you said about the I don't want to be a girl racer, I want to be a racer. I totally agree with that. But I also think that there is advantages of being a girl. But to answer your question, I don't know. I honestly look up to not just girl racers. I have a lot of like idols, like guy racers. But in my mind, I feel like, I think like I want to be a trailblazer. Like that's just, I don't know. It's just deep in my mind. I'm not like, oh my gosh, I want to be like this person. I just want to be myself. I want to be unique. I want to be my own and trailblaze in a way that's not been done before in racing. You know, as my own brand, like maybe in the future have my own racing team and promote Sally Mott Racing. Maybe it's a driver academy or something like that. But I think the right answer to that is trailblazing.
I like it because it's like, not to compare you to someone else, but it reminds me of the spirit that a Janet Guthrie had or a Lynn St. James had. And to me, we kind of need those powerful female figures in racing just because,
sure.
I mean, I'm a guy and I don't view it like, oh, women can't be in racing. I'm kind of one of those guys who are like, you know what? We need the diversity. We need the women. So I'm always puzzled by the fact as to why guys are so resistant to girls racing. Like, why is that? Shouldn't we be happy we have challengers out there regardless of gender?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's just because it's different. And I think at first, you know, if you go back in history, like everything that's different, people are scared of. Not scared of, but they challenge it, right? And I think now, especially now, it's becoming more normalized. And women in motorsports is becoming like very prevalent. Like, you know, if you look at Mazda, for example, they're promoting women and they want more of us in their series. And so they're offering a women's initiative scholarship, top finishing female, like they're offering more money. Like, hey, guys, like join the series because we're offering money. We want more diversity. And it's I'm seeing that not just with Mazda, but like everywhere. Even just like scrolling through my Instagram, I'm like, oh my gosh, here's another female racer. I've never seen her before. Follow, scrolling. Oh my God, here's more. Oh my God. And I also like, I got to go to the WIMNA summit in Phoenix this a few weeks ago. And it was kind of cool because all these faces are only familiar to me on Instagram. So they're kind of like micro celebrities in a way. And I'm like, oh my God, they're all here. Like, and then we were all female racers. And it was just like, this is my community. This is just, I've never felt anything like it because it's so niche. And so when we were together, I'm just like, wow, you know, this is really something special. We're a family because we all share this one specific thing in common.
I was going to ask if you went to that. So that's really cool. You got to go to Avondale and get to meet your fellow female racers or personalities, journalists, whatever role that women are in. And it's like, it's so awesome that we're doing this because I can tell you not even 10 years ago, we weren't even doing things like this. So I agree to your point. Women are finally getting their opportunities, their voices, their platforms. And that's exactly why we started in the first place with the Podium Finish. We wanted to promote women racers, and we're getting back to that because your story in particular to me really appeals to me because, you know, I have two older sisters, I have a mother, and they're amongst my biggest inspirations and role models. And, you know, I have a niece who I've told you about. She loves racing. And I'm, you know, I'm just here thinking, man, your dad's really brave to let you race a go-kart, but then he's got the racing experience. But I've got to ask you, going back to your career, you know, you mentioned about being 8 years old and going in a go-kart, a DR cadet kart, to be specific. What do you remember when you were behind the wheel of that machine and you're going full speed, at least by yourself on the track? I know you mentioned about going the right lines. Was it sort of like a, hey, I just want to figure out how this feels, or I like this, let me go faster?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I don't think I've actually sat down and like thought about it, but if I look back and realize like what I took from that experience, I always thought that going to the track was fun. And I was like excited to drive. I'm like, I don't really know like what makes this thing go fast. I don't know how it works, but all I know is that it's fun and that I have to hit the apexes and track out. And, you know, my dad would always stress the three important parts of a corner, right? Track in, apex and track out. And so that's literally all I was thinking in my mind, like every freaking lap, every corner. Like I was just like so focused. I mean, I was having fun, but I was like, all right, track out, right? Brake, apex, and then, and that dynamic was fun to me because of the process of like thinking about each corner and going into it. I was just having the time of my life. And then down the straightaway, I was like, yeah, like I was just like, I was loving the speed. And I do remember that specifically. But I do think that that made a very strong foundation for me now, even though I started karting when I was 8 and then did it for a few years, just doing like time trial stuff. And then I stopped and then restarted when I was 15, actually competitively racing. Even though there was that big gap, I think doing it for that small time when I was young, like really set a foundation for my racing career. Even just like, even if it was subconsciously, I think it all helped. But going back to what you were asking, I think I didn't know anything about it, but I was just having fun and I knew what I had to do on track and I would get out of the car and hang out with my dad and it was a fun family bonding experience.
I love it because it's like you got to have time with your father growing up because every dad wants to have their time with their kids, especially when they're teenagers, which let's face it, I've been a teenager and I know I probably wasn't the greatest kid, but I tried my best and you're still a teenager, but you're accomplishing a lot more than most of us did at that age. And it's so cool that you're able to be like, not only acclimating to the cart, but you're like, okay, I got to get these three nuances in. Like, it sounds very Matrixy to me, but you have to. So it's like growing up, I think, like you said, when you were 8, you were learning how to do the basics. And then you turned 15, you're like, all right, I got the mechanics now. And, you know, when I think about race car drivers, they often start off young, but you said if I started younger, I would have had better experience. But in a way, do you think, I've only been doing this professionally for the last 3 years, it's kind of actually given me an edge to learn a little bit faster than if I were 8 years old and I have 7+ years of experience.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. But, you know, if you look at some, like there are kids who start in karting at 7 years old, right? And they stick with it. And they're honestly like, they're legendary. Like they're really good. And they move up to cars and it's the natural, or they move up to open wheel, but it's a natural progression, right? They learn racecraft super young. And the thing for me, I feel like if I stuck with it, either one of two things would have happened. One, I would have, you know, stuck with it, enjoyed it, and had a lot more experience and been way farther than I am now. Don't get me wrong, I've progressed very fast for my career. But I'm still like overcoming a learning curve of just basic stuff that I'm like, dang, you know, if I had more experience, this wouldn't be a problem. But number two, I might have gotten burnt out. And if my dad was forcing me and he said, you know what? No, I'm going to make you go to the races and I'm going to make you race, instead of saying, I don't want to be that dad. I don't want to be that dad to force you to do anything. And that's what he said. And so I chose not to, but I could have been burnt out by now and not been racing at all at this point in my life. I could be doing like, I don't know, working at a gas station. I don't know, you know, just to say that, like, I think everything happens for a reason. I think that the stars aligned and it was just, you need to be doing racing because you're cut out for it. And I truly do believe that. I think that the universe is saying that this is where I need to be. I feel like everything is flowing right now, especially this time in my life. And I feel like I am where I'm supposed to be. And I was supposed to lose interest earlier, you know, and stop and then come back to have that mindset change. Cause it was like a switch had flipped. One morning I woke up and I was like, Dad, you know what? That racing thing was kind of cool. Like, can we do that again? And if that didn't happen, who knows where I would be now. So.
Well, I'd be very sad if he didn't do racing because we wouldn't have this conversation, first of all, sure. From a personal level, but professionally, we wouldn't have the great story that we're talking about right now. So that's a really mature and awesome perspective. I never thought of it that way. So I'm glad you did have that little pause because here you are, you're 18 years old and you're doing such amazing things. We're going to get to that here in a second. The one thing I think, I know you probably talked about this in previous interviews, but the one thing that really kind of touched my heart was like your dad traded his boat and your club car to get you that spec Beata so that you could compete at America's Serpentine Road courses. And, you know, what did it mean for you to see your father believe in you that much to be like, you know what, I love that boat, but I'd rather you, Sally, have the best equipment, the best chance to compete for, you know, podiums and victories.
Well, it certainly does mean a lot to me because living where we do, we don't get to go to the beach that often. And my dad, I was born in California and he was also born in California. And, you know, being close to the ocean all the time, now that we're in Texas, we don't get that luxury. And that was really his only escape, was his boat, like to go fishing and be on the water. And he always said he loved two things, racing and fishing. But he loved racing just a little bit more, right? And he would always go on his boat, and it was kind of like his beloved second child almost. And to get my first club car, to get into Spec Miata racing, you know, we needed that chunk of money. And without it, like, there's no way I would be where I am right now. And so he had to sell it, and it meant so much to me because I know how much he wants it for me. I want it just as much as he does, you know. And for him having that background in racing, he understands what it takes. It takes lots of sacrifice, and it does take money. I mean, obviously, racing is one of the most expensive sports in the world. And so when he did that, you know, touched a part of my heart that never felt before. And he's definitely my number one supporter. He believes in me more than anybody else. And so it meant a lot, truly.
I think that was a really cool part to learn about with your journey. And in a way, I'm kind of thinking, well, when you get to be in MX5 next year and you win races and you make a career out of this, I bet you'll get your dad a boat eventually so that you guys can go to the Gulf for sure. So,
you know, lost. Oh, no, for sure. Like, he, a boat for sure. And then his dream car is a red Ferrari. So that's going to be the first thing. When I have the funds, you know, obviously making smart financial decisions. But when I'm up there, you know, I'm going to pay for it for sure.
Well, at least he has a really good daughter to make that happen. And I know you'll make it happen because you've gotten this far. You've gone from karting, and a lot of kids growing up, either, like you said, they want to continue it on, or they realize it's not for them. And, you know, here you are, you're actually racing an MX5 next year. But it wasn't that simple, because you did race at Road Atlanta, I believe, in October for the Petit Le Mans. And that race alone, you had two races, if I recall. Race number one, you pretty much got your feet wet. But race number two had a bit of an interesting moment, if I recall, right?
Yeah, it was. So race number one was pretty intense, just taking the green flag for the first time, you know, just getting my head wrapped around that, like, oh my gosh, this is Petit Le Mans. There's literally 1 million people there. I was like, whoa, that's a lot of people. So race one was kind of just getting my feet wet, like you said. And then race two, there was some carnage in front of me. Like literally like right in front of me, and I avoided it. And unfortunately, that is the reason why I was able to receive top finishing female, which is not the way I would want to receive it, because, you know, by default, since the other girl got taken out, you know, I got it by default, which is not how I roll. Like, I'm used to, I'd rather earn it, but a win is a win, right? I mean, for my first race, it's pretty cool to say that I got to stand on the podium, right? So I'm not complaining by any means. I mean, it was pretty awesome. Like, me and my dad celebrated after, and it was a cool experience. But the whole weekend in general, I was such a good learning experience for my racing career. Like, I learned so much that I've learned this much in 2 days than I did in 6 months of my normal racing. So I loved it, and I'm excited for the next season, because the paddock at the MX5 Cup, it just feels like family, and everyone is so willing to help and super supportive because they want more females, you know, like, they're just, if anything, they want more drivers. They're just super supportive. And I'm just thrilled to be a Mazda driver for next year. So
it's an exciting situation, because you're going to be racing in a series that, you know, a lot of, you know, major sports cars, NASCAR tracks, IndyCar tracks in general, and you're living a dream that many young racers are wishing they could experience. But to get to that path to become a factory driver, you had to take part in a grueling challenge earlier this month in November. And I watched a bit of it. I obviously kept track of it. But when you did enough with just the on-track techniques, and then the interviews you had to do, when you learned that you were the new scholarship winner, what did it mean to you? Was it like a life flashing before your eyes kind of moment? Like, oh my goodness, I've done this. Like, what was it like?
Well, I remember it's not like it was this long ago, but I remember standing there and Shay Adams, shout out to Shay, I love her. She was saying, okay, you know, we're announcing the Women's Initiative Award right now. And dude, all I felt was my heart just boom, boom, boom. And like, there was like a burning in my chest. Like I wanted it so bad. And I didn't know that, like, I didn't know that I wouldn't be able to hold back tears if I didn't. So I was just like trying. I was just like, if they don't call my name, I need to like turn away or something. Just like, I don't want to show that emotion, but I just, it was so strong that I didn't think I could control it, you know? And then she called my name and then there was applause because I went back and watched the live stream. There was like, people were clapping, but I don't remember that. Like that, it was after she said my name, I didn't hear anything. I was like, oh my God, like what? I was like freaking out, but I tried to like, I walked up and then I grabbed the check and the trophy. And I'm like, huh? I'm like, this is not real. This is not real. And let me tell you, 2 days later, no, I woke up the next day and I'm like, nah, this isn't real. This did not happen. And then I woke up. It took 2 days for me to like really internalize it and like let it sink in. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. This is crazy. And so to answer your question, I wanted it so bad that like it didn't sink in when I got it because I was just like, what? And so it took 2 days to sink in. And now I'm still kind of like, what? Until the season starts, it's going to really, really like feel normal. But I wanted it really bad. And it just felt awesome to be able to be awarded something so powerful and something that you've wanted for, you know, a year. It's great. So I'm just honored.
I love the reaction because like your photos don't do justice, but I could tell from the inside, you're just like, I have to be calmly excited, but you're like you just said right now, you're like, oh my God, I did it. And is it one of those situations where you kind of hoping that someone doesn't pinch you to make you realize you were just living a dream, or have you finally accepted it? And when you get to Daytona, it becomes even more real.
Yeah, for sure. Especially the iconic Daytona. Like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I cannot even see straight. But I mean, I think I've realized it, that it's real. It just feels like crazy because I just started my racing career only 3.5 years ago in karting. And now I'm going to be running a full season in the MX5 Cup. I feel like I skipped, like, I feel like it's supposed to be karting, spec Miata, you know, spec MX5 and then MX5 Cup. But like, I skipped everything in between and I'm like, boom, boom. I'm like, oh my God, this doesn't just happen. Like, I don't know. I just, like I said, everything is meant to happen for a reason. And I really believe that. And I'm a like firm believer of that more than ever now because of what's happened to me in my story. So it's really cool.
Well, good things happen to good people like you. And then, hey, if I have to make a good comparison, it's like you went from high school to grad school. So
right,
you are definitely made to do it. You can do this. And what's awesome is that, you know, you kind of talked about your journey a little bit. I'm kind of curious if you had the chance to go back to 2013 and talk to your 8-year-old self, what would you be sharing advice-wise about what you've experienced on and off the racetrack?
Well, I would definitely tell myself it's not going to be easy. The second you get too confident is the second you lose it all. Like if I, you know, think of, oh no, last session I was so fast and I've got this. I do not got this. Like it's that has happened to me multiple times. I'm like, dude, I just need to learn this lesson already because you have to stay humble in racing. And it's so easy to just be like, no, I'm good. I got this, right? And not worry or not do your homework off the track to be prepared. Another thing that I would say is, you know, there's going to be haters. There's going to be people who don't want you to succeed on the track and off the track. You know, there's going to be people who try to make you spin out or crash into you. And there's going to be people that say, you can't do this. This is impossible. Nobody's done this before. You can't do this, but you can. And I've proved it. I've actually experienced that. And then I went out and literally did the thing they said that I couldn't. So I think those are some valuable lessons, and I would definitely tell my younger self that, just to stay encouraged, because it is discouraging sometimes. But if you go through it and you just do it, don't overthink it, you'll be fine.
I like that. It's great advice. And it reminds me of something that one of my favorite celebrities told me a year ago. And I'll share it with you after this interview. But it's true. You have to take your good days and your bad days. You enjoy the support you have. You get fueled by those who may not support you. And you just do your very best. And if you do, you're living life. And that's exactly what you should be doing. And it's just so cool because you do live life. You're not only talented as a race car driver, you are a skilled fisher, you are a podcaster like me, you also do journalism, and you often do modeling with cars. And I think it's so cool that you just have so much that you do. And I know I'm an energetic person, but for those who are not, like, how do you keep up with all that stuff?
Well, that's a good question. I'm actually just now like learning how to like juggle everything, because it's a lot. And being a full-time race car driver, right, it's not just going to the track. It's actually more like business side stuff and putting together deals and, you know, writing blogs for my website or making content, posting on Instagram, posting on TikTok, putting together sponsorship deals. It's a lot. And then, you know, there's other stuff. There's a lot of traveling, and then a lot of networking, I'd say. But juggling things like that, the thing that I've learned the most is making lists. Lists are your best friends, right? You know, you want to wake up in the morning and know exactly what you want to do. Be like, okay, I got to get this done, cross it off. I'm done. I achieved everything in my day. Now I can go, you know, go get a massage or go to the gym or whatever. I mean, for me, the gym is the priority, you know, getting on the simulator, reading my racing books, doing my research on sponsors, and always trying to get new people on board. And another thing is my social media, right? You got to keep up with the social media. It's a lot of work. It's you want to post every single day. You want to get stuff out there. You want to make sure people know who you are. I mean, it's a grind. It really is. And I don't think I could do this if I was, for example, like if I had like a 9-to-5 job, or if I was going to college to study something. Right now, I'm like putting all my energy into this. I'm taking this as a full-time job, and I'm treating it that way at least. And I just don't know how you could do it without, like, it's a lot of work. But for sure, lists are your friends, and making schedules and Google calendars. That's a big one. Sure you have a lot of experience with all of your interviews and Zooms and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I'm making lists. I'm glad that you said that, because I get teased about that. And I'm like, it's not a 30-year-old person's thing. It's a smart person's thing. Because like, if I forget to do something, I look like I'm crazy. So thank you, Sally, for mentioning that, because people give me a lot of grief about that.
You can't remember all of the stuff you got to do. Like, I'm always just like writing it in my phone, and then I'm like, okay, I'm on my notes app, and I'm like, delete, got that done. And it's so satisfying when you delete something because you achieved it, and you're like, all right, delete, and then you have nothing left, and you're like, yes, I did it. So that's just me, though.
See, folks, that's why we're best friends. It's like, that's why she won the Mazda MX-5 Women's Initiative Scholarship.
I made a list. Oh yeah,
because she made lists. That's why we're not here for the racing stuff. But I'm kidding. We're here for the racing stuff, of course. I got a couple more questions for you, and I'm having a great time, you know, learning about you and having our fans learn about you. So I'm going to put you in the journalist seat again. If you had to use three words to describe who you are as a person and as a race car driver, what words would you use and why?
That's a good question. I would say one of the first word that comes to mind is determined. I feel this so deep in my heart and soul that this is where I need to be, that I'm going to do anything I can do to make this work. So I'm determined to succeed in what I'm doing. I think another one is, I feel like I'm hardworking. I feel like I would sacrifice anything for this opportunity to make it work as much as it can work. And do all the research and do all the work behind the scenes to just let everything flow and go into place like it is. And very grateful for that. Especially being a girl, I feel like I have to work harder, and I kind of love it because it's more motivating. Another one, I would say, oh man, this is hard. On track, I would say, this one's for on track. I would say a sponge. That's what I aspire to be, a sponge. So like learning everything I can on track and off track. I think this whole thing is a journey. And if you're not learning in life, then you're not living life. So I feel like, I don't know, it's kind of a weird way to, like a weird word to say, but I mean, a sponge, it's perfect. So yeah.
I get what you mean. It's like you're assimilating stuff. So you're very inquisitive and you're knowledge seeking. So I get it. I say sponge too. So you're not unusual to say that four words. So I like that. Good choice of three words for that. Now for my last question, hopefully not too trite. If you had the opportunity to build a racetrack anywhere around the world, where would it be and what kind of track would it be?
Oh my gosh. That is a really good question. Actually, I know the answer to this one. I would say Costa Rica. That's actually me and my dad's like favorite place to go to vacation. And we want to live there once we have the funds and stuff, we're going to move to Costa Rica. But I would say a big track, Costa Rica, road course. It would have elevation for sure. It would be pretty flowy with some hairpins and some straightaways. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it, but Costa Rica for sure. Maybe even near like the beach, perhaps. I don't know. That's a good question. Where do you come up with these questions?
I just think them out and I get it from ChatGPT. No, I'm kidding. Okay. I don't get it from AI. It's just questions I just have been inquisitive about over the years. So see what happens when you just converse with people. But no, I like that. Costa Rica. I haven't been down to the south other than to Mexico. So I'm curious how that is.
Oh, yeah. It's really beautiful. It's really nice.
Well, I would say I like Texas, but right now, I'm pretty sure you could say the same thing for yourself down in Victoria, but here in Texas, it's gotten cold. So it's like,
oh yeah, super cold right now, especially for us. But I feel like people in like, you know, Alaska, they're like, that's nothing. You guys need to just grow some skin, man. Like this is hot to them. So, but for us, I'm pretty cold.
Well, yes, because folks, I'm actually wearing long sleeve thermals. I don't usually, I have my baseball shirt. So this is a cold one for us. But before we wrap things up, do you have anything else you want to say to the fans, to the, you know, the folks at TPF about, you know, your social media efforts, where they can find you?
Well, I guess I'll do a shameless plug. SallyMottRacing.com. That's my website. And then SallyMottRacing is my Instagram. And I can't wait to hear from you guys. I love talking to people and especially fans who have questions. I'm super passionate about what I do. So, I mean, I'd love to share the love. So ask me, DM me, whatever. And yeah, looking forward to it.
As you kids like to say, hit her up for some racing talk. Yeah. I don't know why we say that. It sounds so odd for my generation to say that. Hit you up. But Sally, I had a great time chatting with you. And certainly this will not be the only time you're here on the hot seat, because hopefully we'll get to catch up with you a lot in 2024, which is honestly not that far away. And that makes me feel pretty sadly old to say 2024.
I know. That's kind of crazy. Only a month away.
And that was Sally Mott in the hot seat for this edition of TPF Live. My thanks, of course, goes to Sally for making that interview possible recently. Best of luck to her in the upcoming 2024 Mazda MX-5 Cup Series season, which, yes, folks, gets ready at Daytona. So if you heard that interview fully, you know that she's super, super excited for racing on the high banks of Daytona in the road course section, of course, as well. We're looking forward to having her on quite a bit for next season, because we'll be working with her in terms of getting her thoughts about the season and much, much more. But it's almost time to go and wrap up TPF Live episode number 97, which means next episodes are going to be 98, 99, and 100. And if we do a show every week between now and then, that means on the week of Christmas, we will have our centennial episode. Who's going to be our guest for that? I'm not going to tell you. I already know who it is. That's how cool
I am.
It's
a surprise.
It's a special surprise. That's right. But
it's very special because you told me, I forget how, when I found out, but I think the people will love it.
Yes, they were going to love it. And he or she may not be the only guest on this show. So I am not going to give you more cookies along the way, folks. You're just going to have to listen to each show, and I'll throw a hint out there, but I'll be better than Carly Simon when it comes to who You're So Vain's about, because even to this day, she hasn't told us who that song's about. And Brooklyn's here, and we still don't know who she sang about. Maybe she sang about me. I don't know, but I wouldn't have been around in 1972 or three. I don't know. I'm just trying to make some weird, weird conversations, but yeah, it's going to be a great show. These next several weeks, and then we get to episode 100, you better be there. I know Brooklyn will be here. I know Nathan will probably be back. But once we get to episode 100, that means it's 2024. So, gonna be fun. But Brooklyn, do you have any last words for this episode of episode number 97?
Yeah. Thank you for having me on. I had a fun time. Yeah.
And we'll have you back on, don't you worry, because Nathan will probably be busy still. So it will be good to have you on, not only when we need to have another co-host, but you can be on too when Nathan's here. So it'll be a good trio on TPF Live. So really happy you got to join me on this episode, even with my voice starting to go away, thanks to Cedar Fever season kicking off here in Texas. So yay for allergies, not really, but Nathan will be back at some point this month on our show. Best of luck to him with his studies, of course, and all the St. Bonaventure action that I'm sure he's getting to enjoy. But as far as I'm concerned, episode number 98 is coming up next week. We won't tell you what's going to happen on that episode. Just stay tuned. It's going to be fun. But in this case, folks, it's time to go and wrap up episode number 97. So for Brooklyn Jackson and Sally Mott, I'm Rob Tiongson saying thanks so much for joining us here on the world's fastest hour of racing talk. Be sure to catch our prior 96 episodes on major podcasting platforms, Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. We'll be back next week for episode number 98. And until then, stay safe. Let's all go get that checkered flag, even in the off season. And until next time, so long, everyone.